difficulties that bring me to my knees and make me re-examine my pocketbook every single day. But yet when we think about these things as opportunities for us to become more like God, to become apart from the vessels of clay and be more into vessels for honor, that gives meaning to our life. And that gives purpose to our life. And when we're facing these difficulties, when we come to services, when we read our Bible, when we envelop ourselves in prayer, we should see ourselves as becoming more and more like the person that God wanted us to be all along. That's the way that we should look at these things. The thing that we need to realize is there's a difference between something that's hard and something that's worthwhile. Look with me, if you would, in the book of Hebrews. I think Hebrews paints this perfectly. Hebrews chapter 11, more specifically. One of the heroes of the faith of the Old Testament was a man by the name of Moses. And Moses did a lot of fantastic things. It should be noted, by the way, that by the time Moses started, what he's most well known for, his time in Egypt, his leading the people through the Exodus, he was 80 years old. So those of you who are thinking, well, I'm 75 and I'm not thinking of anyone specifically, but you think to yourself, I'm just too old to do anything fantastic. Moses was 80 when he really started getting going. But in Hebrews the 11th chapter, starting in verse 25, listen to what it says about him as he examined his life. Actually, starting verse 24. Hebrews 11th chapter and verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. And here's the linchpin, verse 26. Considering the reproaches of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. For he was looking towards the reward. Verse 27. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. He endured as seeing him who is unseen. By faith, he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. Verse 29, by faith, they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. We don't give nearly enough credibility and enough praise for Moses on what he left behind as much as we do on what he did. Moses did fantastic things in the wilderness. When you imagine somebody putting up with 2.5 million people in the wilderness that cry day in and day out, I get a little bit annoyed whenever Logan wakes up in the middle of the night and needs a bottle. That's a little bit of an annoyance. But when you think about 2.5 million people day in, day out for 40 years murmuring, questioning you, questioning God, questioning why you're even out there in the first place, Moses did a lot of fantastic things. But Moses also left behind a world in which he wanted for nothing. Being the son of Pharaoh's daughter granted him all the privileges, all the education, all the lusts, all the temptations that he could indulge himself in for the rest of his life. He wanted for nothing. And yet when he saw his countrymen out there being killed, he chose to live with those people and become a nomad in the wilderness under his father-in-law. Than to be with these people who was part of the greatest empire of the world at that time. And verse 26 gives the answer in Hebrews 11th chapter, because he was looking towards the reward. It's hard sometimes whenever we're going through trials. It's hard sometimes when we think about all the things that God asks us to give up. Well, I don't want to give up that. I'll give up 99% of all the things that he asked me to give up. But I just really love that thing. And we think to ourselves, well, I'll give everything I have to him, but I can't give Sunday morning. I'll use that example again. And too often times when we do that, we get so caught up in what we're leaving behind and not, as Moses did, looking to what was ahead of us. Hebrews 11th chapter, verses 13 through 16 says that about everybody. That all these people were looking for a promise for a homeland that was not yet here, and yet they saw it afar off. That's what faith is all about. We say that faith is what gets you through trials, what gets you through temptations. It's not just that you have belief that it'll be better tomorrow. That's a part of it. But it's the belief that everything you're going through now will be paid off way in the future. That the glory that you will eventually become a part of is incomparable to any tortures, any trials, any temptations you may go through today. We ask ourselves the question, how do we become, like 1 John chapter 5, verse 3 says, how do we become this person who says that I do the commandments of God and his commandments are not burdensome? How do I get to that point? And now I'm going to give you some very practical advice that comes from my vast 29 years of experience, that's, I'm sure, more profound than I'm sure anybody else here. That was supposed to be sarcasm. It didn't come out very well. The way that we become this higher person is through nothing less than total commitment. I know that because in 1 John, the 5th chapter, you would flip over that, he says this very thing after that. 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3, as he's starting this section, he's ending up this book, and he's starting this section about his commandments not being burdensome. And John was the apostle of love. He knew when to be right. He knew when to turn people towards him. He knew when to be loving. 1 John chapter 5, starting verse 3, he says, "For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome." Verse 4, "For whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith." That's what we just talked about. Verse 5, "Who is the one who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God?" You want to know the secret to making his commandments not burdensome? It's simple: living by faith and overcoming the world. Now you ask yourself, what does that have to do with total commitment? The last thing that John records that Jesus said to his apostles right before he was led away to be crucified, in John chapter 16 and verse 33, as he's giving his last instructions to people who are desperate to wonder where he's going, desperate for him to stay with them, in John chapter 16 and verse 33, he gives a little glimmer of hope when he says, "In the world you have tribulation." That's the understatement of the millennium. But he says, "Be of good courage, for I have overcome the world." And those people that are sitting there, and then John or Jesus would go off to record the high priestly prayer, one of the most profound and beautiful sections of all of Scripture, in John chapter 17. But when he says to them, "Take or be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world," what he means by that is, I'm going to deliver myself up to be crucified. And through that crucifixion, I'm going to overpower death, I'm going to come back from the dead, and I am going to defeat Satan. The way that Jesus overcame the world, the way that Jesus overcame Satan, was by fulfilling his mission and by giving everything, including his own life, to fulfill that mission. The way that you and I are going to overcome the world is by giving, as we've said several times throughout this week already, by giving every single drop of our soul and every last bit of our heart towards God. I went a couple years ago, actually it was, I guess, 5 or 6 years at this point. I went skydiving, and it was